From MainePublic.org, I'm Barbara Caridi, bringing you the news on this day in Maine, Friday, December 2nd, 2016. And on this day, a group that helped push Governor Paul LePage's welfare reforms and defeat Medicaid expansion in Maine is working to enact similar reforms nationwide. A new report indicates that mercury levels in the Gulf of Maine's tuna population are on the decline. And after 30 years of effort, Maine outdoor recreation enthusiasts celebrate the completion of the 87-mile-long Downey Sunrise Trail. Those stories and more after this.
This Day in Maine is made possible by listeners and by USM's Muskie School of Public Service Masters of Policy Planning and Management, preparing students to be a force for positive change in their communities.
I'm Barbara Caridi. To carry out its aggressive efforts to shrink Maine's welfare rolls, the LePage administration has turned to a Florida-based group that also has strong roots in Maine. The Foundation for Government Accountability, or FGA, is now working to replicate the Maine experience nationwide with help from a Republican-controlled Congress and President-elect Donald Trump. Steve Missler has our story.
The FGA has advised and bolstered the LePage administration's efforts to dramatically overhaul welfare. It's helped push time limits on Mainers receiving cash benefits and to reinstate a work requirement for those receiving food assistance. It's also helped defeat multiple attempts to expand Medicaid health coverage for low-income residents. Now, Taryn Bragdon, president of the FGA, is confident that policies enacted in Maine and other states can help convince the new guard in Washington to enact bold welfare changes at the federal level that could affect millions of Americans. He says his organization has already met directly with Republican leaders in Congress, including House Speaker Paul Ryan.
And we're eager to work with the Trump administration as well as leadership in Congress to implement those reforms. And our sense is that's going to be a priority in the first 100 days.
Bragdon's Beltway connections are relatively new, but his Maine roots run deep. He grew up here. Elected to the Maine legislature in 1996 at age 21, Bragdon later headed the Maine Heritage Policy Center, another conservative advocacy group that heavily influenced Republicans' tax, health care, and welfare policy, a platform credited with strengthening Republican ranks at the statehouse. Bragdon later joined Governor Paul LePage's transition team after the governor won election in 2010. He advised LePage on cabinet nominations, including the governor's eventual pick for health commissioner, Mary Mayhew.
We need to focus on how do we support individuals, but not create programs that fundamentally discourage work.
Mayhew hopes the new power dynamic in D.C. will lead to what she calls disruptive change, to break what she sees as a powerful dependence on public assistance. It's not a new theme for Republicans. In fact, here's Ronald Reagan in his 1986 State of the Union address, quoting Franklin D. Roosevelt.
He said, "Welfare is a narcotic, a subtle destroyer of the human spirit, and we must now escape the spider's web of dependency."
Mayhew also quoted FDR in a panel discussion hosted by the conservative D.C.-based think tank, the American Enterprise Institute.
"To administer our relief in this way is to administer a narcotic that destroys the human spirit."
Also on that panel was Republican Kansas Governor Sam Brownback, another early adopter of the FGA's 36-state effort to dramatically change welfare. Brownback used the same occasion to quote another prominent Democrat, Daniel Patrick Moynihan, the assistant labor secretary in a Lyndon Johnson administration that gave birth to the welfare programs Medicaid, Medicare, and food stamps.
"It cannot too often be said that the issue of welfare is not what it costs those who provide it, but what it costs those who receive it."
This is a core message for the FGA and for House Speaker Paul Ryan, who just happens to be a former staffer for Brownback when he was a U.S. Senator. This is Ryan in a video promoting his Better Way anti-poverty plan.
"The problem with our welfare system today is it's basically a work replacement system. It's a system that discourages work. It's a system that penalizes work. And as a result, people don't work. And so people stay stuck in poverty."
"I don't think anyone aspires to be a SNAP participant. I think people are looking for good paying jobs that will help them meet their basic needs.
Stacy Dean is the vice president for food assistance at the D.C.-based Center on Budget and Policy Priorities, a group on the front lines countering Ryan's welfare agenda. Dean's organization is worried the GOP-controlled Congress and Trump administration will push austere cuts to the safety net, slash funding for food stamps, Medicaid, and other programs. But Congress, she says, could temper the changes. She notes that the tone of the rhetoric in Washington is different than what she has observed in Maine.
It does not blame individuals for being in poverty. It suggests that we can help folks break the cycle of poverty, which is a laudable goal.
And Democratic State Representative Drew Gattine says those looking to Maine as a leader in reform should scrutinize the results.
Cutting the program without doing the things on the other end that make them work better is simply cutting the program. It's not reform. It's not contributing to the goals of the program. And again, to me, it's just rhetoric.
Gattine is a member of the Health and Human Services Committee that vetted many of the LePage administration's welfare proposals. He says the changes have made it harder for needy people to get assistance or just kick them off altogether. And Gattine says state poverty data do not support the administration's assertion that leaving welfare has brought economic prosperity to former recipients.
But what we're seeing is these programs being shrunk, being made more difficult to access, and we're seeing poverty go up, we're seeing hunger go up, and we're seeing fewer people with health insurance. So you know, from my perspective, this has been a big failure.
Gattine describes the efforts by Mayhew and LePage as politically expedient, but punitive. Still, he acknowledges that the welfare debate has been challenging for Democrats. LePage and legislative leaders have made the issue central to their electoral efforts, and they've been rewarded. It's unclear if Speaker Ryan or Trump can replicate Maine's policy or political outcomes, but FGA head Taryn Bragdon thinks big changes are coming to welfare in Maine and elsewhere.
I think that with the Trump administration, you have folks at the state level preparing brand new wish lists of what they would like to be able to do, and I suspect that they'll get almost everything on their wish list and in short order.
For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Steve Missler.
Governor Paul LePage, meanwhile, is telling state lawmakers that he will rubber stamp their election certificates despite his concerns about the accuracy of Maine's official election results. Democratic lawmakers are criticizing the governor for casting doubt on the integrity of the election results without providing any evidence. The results were certified by Secretary of State Matt Dunlap, a Democrat. LePage is casting doubt on results approving marijuana legalization, a minimum wage hike, and an income surtax to fund schools. Representative Justin Chenette, a Democrat from Saco, tweeted that LePage's rhetoric is baseless and, quote, hurts democracy. And down in Washington, Maine Independent Senator Angus King is calling on President Obama to release top-secret information on alleged Russian attempts to interfere with the presidential election. King was among seven senators who signed a letter Wednesday asking Obama to publicly release details on potential Russian involvement in the election. King says a foreign government aimed an arrow, quote, at the heart of democracy, and says America should take it very seriously, according to the Portland Press Herald. The senators are all Democrats except for King. They each received classified briefings as part of the Senate Intelligence Committee. Maine's Republican U.S. Senator Susan Collins also serves on the committee. She declined to sign the letter. And an inmate at the Androscoggin County Jail was found unresponsive Thursday evening and later died at a local hospital. As Patty White reports, Scott Harmon of Auburn was facing felony drug-related charges.
52-year-old Scott Harmon had been in custody at the jail for just 24 hours when a corrections officer doing rounds discovered Harmon was having difficulty breathing. Androscoggin County Sheriff Eric Sampson says Harmon was transported to Central Maine Medical Center, where he died.
We have both an internal investigation going on just to make sure our policies, procedures, and practices are followed. And we call the State Police Major Crimes Unit as they will conduct a criminal investigation, which is normal under a situation like this.
Sampson says the state medical examiner is also investigating the cause of death. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Patty White.
And while some colleges have boycotted athletic events in North Carolina because of its new law that limits protections for LGBT people, the University of Maine Black Bears will take a different approach. Vice President of Student Affairs Robert Dana says it was a complicated decision to allow the men's basketball team to play the top-ranked Duke Blue Devils tomorrow evening in North Carolina, but Dana says the team will go to show solidarity with the LGBT community. They'll meet with LGBT student groups in North Carolina and Maine before and after the match. And, says Dana, they'll wear special rainbow-emblazoned T-shirts to symbolize inclusion.
They will be meeting with LGBTQ students there. They've talked to transgender educators as late as yesterday, and they will be talking to people from our LGBTQ resource center. So they're going to learn about all aspects of the issue, and at the center of that is how this feels and looks discriminatory to places like the University of Maine.
Maine will receive $85,000 for playing against Duke. Dana says the money will be used to support the UMaine basketball program, but may also be used to highlight the athletic department's commitment to LGBT issues. The game begins at 5:30 on ESPN2. Coming up, there's some good news for sushi lovers in a new report on mercury levels in the Gulf of Maine's tuna population. A new report finds that during an 8-year period, mercury levels in the Gulf of Maine's tuna population declined 2% a year. As Fred Bever reports, it's a decline that parallels reductions in mercury pollution from coal-fired power plants in the Midwest.
2 years ago, Dr. Nicholas Fisher, a professor of marine sciences at Stony Brook University in New York, had a bit of luck. He found out that a colleague had established a collection of 1,300 Western Atlantic bluefin taken from the Gulf of Maine between 2004 and 2012.
They were frozen. Wasn't the entire fish. It was just about a pound from each fish or so. And then my colleagues and I dissected out muscle tissue from each sample and analyzed it to determine the mercury content of each fish.
And as they created a timeline for mercury content for each year, taking into account the age and size of each fish sampled, a clear picture emerged.
There was a fairly steady decline for all ages of fish, and the decline rate was approximately 2% per year, which doesn't sound all that dramatic, but over 10 years, it's about 20%. Over two decades, it's about 40%.
Most mercury pollution in this region originates from coal-fired power plants in the Midwest, drifting east on the prevailing winds to drop on the coast and coastal waters. In response to regulatory and industry efforts and to market forces, those emissions happen to have been declining by about 2% a year. Same for mercury measured in eastern waterways and off the coast, down roughly 2 or even 3% a year.
So it seemed as if the fish were responding in real time to the declines in loadings of mercury into the North Atlantic.
If the trend has continued since the last sample examined from 2012, Fisher says it's reasonable to speculate that the amount of mercury in West Atlantic bluefin in the Gulf of Maine has dropped by 30% since 2002. That could be important for human health, he says, because the highly toxic metal works up the oceanic food chain to bioaccumulate in the flesh of top predators such as tuna and swordfish, and then into the American diet.
We analyzed these fish for mercury because there is concern about mercury levels in tuna. Tuna are thought to account for up to about 40% of all the human exposure to mercury in the United States. So they're the single greatest individual source of mercury for human beings.
But Fisher is not a toxicologist, and he warns that even with the declines, tuna still carry a very heavy load of mercury. He says more work is necessary to determine whether his findings have any bearing on current government guidelines for fish consumption. There's also not much known about whether mercury affects fish health or behavior. Fisher says one of his graduate students is embarking on a research project to try to find out. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Fred Bever.
Meanwhile, state and federal authorities are investigating the shooting deaths of two rare Canada lynx in Maine. The Maine Warden Service and the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service say the lynx were shot dead in northern Oxford and Aroostook counties in mid-November. The lynx looks similar to a bobcat and is listed as a threatened species under U.S. endangered species laws. Killing one unlawfully carries a fine of up to $100,000 and as much as a year in prison. The group Maine Operation Game Thief is offering a $2,500 reward to anyone with information that leads to a conviction stemming from either cat's death. The Fish and Wildlife Service is doing the same, and the Maine Trappers Association is offering a $500 reward per conviction. And the city of Bangor announced late this afternoon that it has settled a lawsuit brought by Metro Treatment of Maine, a Bangor methadone clinic that wants to expand to serve 300 more patients. In August, the city denied the expansion plans, saying that the methadone clinic failed to demonstrate a need for expansion as required by a local ordinance dealing with methadone treatment. Metro Treatment filed suit, alleging that the ordinance was discriminatory. As part of the settlement, Assistant City Solicitor Paul Nicholas says the lawsuit will be dismissed and the ordinance will be repealed at an upcoming City Council meeting December 12th. After that, Nicholas says the clinic is free to pursue its plans.
As long as they meet whatever requirements the state has, they have to secure state approval, too.
Earlier this month, a federal judge found the ordinance discriminatory. The judge also said that the ordinance violated the Americans with Disabilities Act because it singled out medical treatment for a protected class of people, in this case, individuals with substance use disorder. Under the settlement, each party is released from paying any damages. And a recreational rail trail project that has been nearly 30 years in the making was completed today with the addition of two final miles, connecting Ellsworth to Calais, 87 miles away. The multi-use Downey Sunrise Trail is the longest trail of its type and part of the East Coast Greenway that extends all the way to Key West, Florida. As A.J. Higgins reports, the final phase of the $1.3 million project is expected to boost the Ellsworth area's economy.
The all-terrain vehicle riders arrived in Ellsworth in force to officially recognize the completion of the Downey Sunrise Trail that was constructed on the former Calais branch of the Maine Central Railroad. The rail trail has been used by ATVers, snowmobilers, hikers, bikers, cross-country skiers, and snowshoers for the last 6 years. Now the last 2 miles of the system have been completed and will bring trail users right into Ellsworth's downtown.
This is truly part of Maine's transportation network.
Maine DOT Commissioner David Bernhardt, who worked in partnership with the State Department of Agriculture, Conservation and Forestry and others to complete the final phase of the trail, says it should be an economic benefit to the community.
We all know that transportation plays a huge role in economic development and opportunity, and this completed section will encourage trail users to visit Ellsworth, you know, local restaurants, lodging facilities, fuel stations, merchandise sales, and having the trailhead in the city of Ellsworth will entice tourists to visit this unique trail system.
Agriculture, Conservation, and Forestry Commissioner Walter Whitcomb said the trail that links Washington and Hancock counties is an example of how multiple-use projects can succeed in Maine. Although about 60% of the trail's traffic is motorized, equestrians, hikers, and bikers also use the route.
This kind of thing is, in this part of Maine, is really integral to our culture, and not even all of Maine understands that. Motorized sports aren't a bad thing. They're part of our life. We enjoy that. We can coexist in our trail systems throughout the state.
Eric DeSilva, Education Program Coordinator for the Bike Coalition of Maine, says the Downeast Trail is known for its courteous ATVers and snowmobilers who frequently check with non-motorized travelers to see if they need any assistance. Still, he says that doesn't mean common sense shouldn't prevail on the trail.
So it's just really important to wear bright colors, be seen, and follow like general trail courtesy.
Longtime Hancock County Sheriff Bill Clark, who now serves as a county commissioner in the area, says he heard plenty of naysayers when the project began in 1985, who doubted that motorized and non-motorized recreationists could coexist.
Things have worked out just fine. Those conflicts are not there.
In addition to linking the two Downeast counties, the rail trail also connects to 800 miles of ATV and snowmobile trails throughout Maine. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm A.J. Higgins.
And utility crews continue working to restore power to more than 2,300 Maine customers in the far north in the wake of yesterday's snowstorm. Emera Maine says most customers in Aroostook County should have their power restored by the end of today and the remainder by tomorrow. Stormy weather, including a mix of freezing rain and sleet and gusty winds, also knocked out power to customers in Hancock, Penobscot, Washington, and Piscataquis counties. And finally, here's meteorologist Paul Cousins to tell us what's in store for the weekend and beyond.
This past November will be noted for its unseasonable warmth, voluminous rain and snow, a blessing, and excessive cloudiness. Going forward in the short term, however, colder, drier, and eventually brighter. Snow showers will continue far north in mountains tonight, clouds enshrouding the rest of the state, low 20s to low 30s north to south. Tomorrow, the clouds will hang on tenaciously over the mountains in the northern half of Maine, with additional mountain snow showers. Expect limited sunshine throughout the remainder of Maine, windy statewide, near 30 in the St. John Valley to the mid-40s coastal York County. Sunday, cold yet quite bright, top to bottom, a bit of a breeze, mid-20s north to upper 30s south. Monday, partly sunny south, partly cloudy north, less wind, low 20s north to 40 south. Tuesday, a stunning day, dazzling sunshine statewide and quiet, mid-20s to low 40s north to south, and a complex storm looms midweek. And markedly colder air will swirl into Maine by the end of the week. This is meteorologist Paul Cousins for Maine Public.
And that's the news on this day in Maine, Friday, December 2nd, 2016. Robert Holt composed our theme music. Thanks to our news leaders, Keith Shortall, Susan Sharon, and Andrew Catalina, and to Steve Missler, Fred Bever, Patty White, A.J. Higgins, and Ed Morin for their contributions. We'd like to hear your thoughts on the podcast. You can rate and comment in iTunes, or you can email us at tdim@mainepublic.org. I'm Barbara Caridi. For all of us here at Maine Public, thanks for listening, and have a great weekend.